Yeah. Okay, let's start in the Siva Shtika, I guess. So, I guess there's something about it that's oxymoronic to speak a lot about Shtika. I remember Moshe Shapiro, I went in one of the first years that I used to go to him, he was doing the Rambam Hilchos Deos, and he got to, the Rambam speaks about the Mile of Shtika, and he said, dry, cynical way, "Efshal ledaber harbe harbe b'amailas hashtika." But at any rate, I guess there is a question to frame, which Rav Moshe framed b'shaito, if I remember it correctly. The Rambam touts shtika as a mila, and as something which is, you know, it's a big mile, it's a midah tov, etc., 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 etc. One wouldn't think it like that. Dibur needs to, Dibur has certain isurim associated with it. If it's lashon hara, if it's litzanis, if it's sheker, this and that. So we'll give an example. If I tell a person, you know, a person is not careful in kashrus. So I tell him, you know what, when you go out, don't eat anything. Stay away from anything, you know, have your bottle of water and whatever it is, and don't eat anything. So it would be praiseworthy as a precautionary measure not to eat treifas. So, you know, we tell a person, okay, you know, stay away from this because you're going to be nichshol. But I wouldn't call that mila as a positive attribute. I wouldn't call it a certain midah. I would say it's a way to refrain from things. Shtika is, you know, I mean, I can speak. The Torah allowed me to talk, and except there's a long, long list of things that you're not allowed to speak. And since it's very difficult to refrain, so we need to keep it. We need to keep it sort of, we need to maybe be shosik more. But shtik in its own right as a maila, my tivoy. And I think he will, this is a point that it will be addressed by him. V'seif ha-mishle. In Mishle it says, choysech amorov yodei adas. A person who is what's the right word for it? He's sparing with his words. Is someone who knows das. And a person who's yikar ruach is a ishtvuna. Shlomo rotze lomar ki mi shehu moneh adibur shelo more shehu yodeh adas olkach moneh adibur. So lechura, I mean, there is a pasuk that he brings later, further on. It says evel machrish chochem yechashiv, that if an idiot keeps quiet, we can consider him smart. That's a piece of good advice. It just, you know, you needn't confirm everybody's suspicions about how stupid you are. Leave something to imagination. Don't talk so much. That's sort of you know, fatherly advice. Here we're talking about, Hirshlom Melech says that a person who's chosech hamar of yodei adas. Where's it come from? V'ldova ze pirashim prokem is called mar bedvorem evichet ki kasher mar bedvorem ha'ikas ha'nefesh ha'medaberes. So let's talk about this point over here. This is the point that he's making. The morale in many places makes this chaluka between seichel yuni and seichel dibri. Seichel yuni is the type of thought process where I'm trying to understand something, get to the heart of something, get to the understanding of something, and that is called seichel yuni. Then, let's give an example in learning. A person, there's a kasha. So I'm sitting and trying to answer the kasha, and then I get an idea. And usually the idea that I get is kind of unformed yet. And then I begin to give it a format that I can express it to other people. A person, let's say, has to speak at some occasion where he's deeply moved. So he's deeply moved and he has feelings. And now I need to translate those feelings into words. The seichel hayuni, the thought process of just groping with the thing itself, is from me for me. It's a very, very internal process. And it's about me. And a person who sits and thinks something, he is kula in a world of seichel. And that is as far as we could, most of us could ever get to being in a world that's not chumriistic. When we start processing that seichel into dibur, we make it a lot more concrete. We make it a lot more. It becomes a sort of object. It becomes a dover, a dibur, and the word dover, meaning word and thing, are the same. What I do is I take a vague feeling, and I give it some words which already concretize it to some degree. Also, the purpose of speaking is usually for me to gain something from. I enjoy being listened to. I want to get my way with people. I love the attention. Whatever it is, the dibur already is the dibur is already part and participle of a world around. So, for instance, let's say
Could you use the dibur to clarify the iuni?
Okay, so to some degree, yes, that's a very legitimate use. For instance, when a person, let's say, is learning and he has an idea, svara, a shtigl Torah, so in that vague state, it has potential, but there's also a lot of potential for error and a lot of unclarity as to what you meant. In other words, so frame it exactly, and definitely so. There's a famous saying from Reb Chaim Briska, as is felt in hasbara, felt in svara, that if there's a lack of ability to express something, then there's a lack of understanding. So yes, if I can't finalize it and give it clear definitions that could, so a noble purpose of seichel hadibri is to give it a body, and to allow it to come down to this world. It is legitimate that when I have, let's go to the example of svara, I had an idea, a pshat in this. So the pshat itself at that stage tends to be on the vague side. It's just sort of a feeling of where the difference lies. Now I have to give it structure and say, okay, so how exactly am I defining the distinction? When does it apply? Why does it apply here? Why doesn't it apply here? And so on. So it is, when the seichel dibri is being appropriately developed, it's to give the seichel iuni, or what you came up with the seichel iuni, flesh and bones. But much of the time, it sort of cheapens it. When a person takes a very deep regish that he has, and he sort of makes a public production out of it, then he's taken something that sort of, as long as it's in my heart, and it's at the stage of my personal feelings, that's extremely ruchni. When I sell it into, when I make it into a bestseller, and it's now public words, it dilutes it, it cheapens it, it takes something out of it. There's a story, and I don't know if I'm not in a position to yes interpret, not interpret events, but this is the way it's brought. Rav Soloveitchik, I believe it's an Ish Halacha, or Kol Dodi. One of the Mamorim that he speaks about, Beis Brisk, in awe, he says, he brings a story that when he left to go to Berlin, he went in to say goodbye to his father. Now, his father recognized, I mean, they recognized that they would not possibly see each other for a very long time, or maybe forever. You know, it was a goodbye. And he was going to go off to a strange country and a different culture and so on. And there was somebody there. And the goodbye that Rav Soloveitchik and his father wished each other had all the emotional depth and beauty of a Litvish goodbye, you know, kind of, you're going now. No, it should be l'chaim shalom, a lot of atzlocha, and so on. You know, and that was about it. So Rav Soloveitchik writes that the person who saw this goodbye thought to himself that he's never seen such cold, unfeeling, unloving, unsympathetic people. But he says it's not true. He said there was nobody in the world that cared about his children as much as my father did, and so on. It's just that they believed that one's regesh is Kodesh Kodashim, and Kodesh Kodashim is off limits to a czar. No strange eyes can ever look at it. And it's machalit if you look at it. So the expressing of the of those feelings would have been, would have sort of contaminated it, because it's supposed to say inside. Now, I'm not in position to comment about the Gufa Uvda, but many of the people that knew the people involved seem to feel that the outsider's observation might have been keen. But certainly in terms of expression, when a person brings something out, and the bringing it out is not with a matara to help him formulate his feelings appropriately. They're not the matar when you need to do it, but it's just because I want it to be, I can't relate to things that are sort of vague and ruchni. So that is a nechostag, and that's cheapening it and bringing it down. So he says, that's why a person talks too much. He's saying, it's too much dibur, because that's where he lives. He lives more in the dibur. It's like lemashal. I mean, you'll take. Let's take another example. Let's take a mashal of a mashal. When somebody is speaking for a very cerebral, thoughtful, deeper audience, he makes his points. At particularly different points, he may need to use a mashal to clarify his point. You know, at some point of abstraction, you lose it, and a mashal helps solidify what it is exactly that you're trying to say, and so on. If you speak for a very simple audience and you want to get a point across, the mashal itself takes the better part of the drasha. You elaborate on it, and you embellish it, and you say the point gets sneaked in as a line or two somewhere in the discourse, because really the audience needs to live with the mashal. That's what they are. That's what they are. They can't live with anything else. So their world of reality is the mashal. You sneak in at the end, and we see the moral of the story is that you should do X or Y or Z, because their world of reality is things, and mashals, and a king, and a queen, and a this, and a that, and so on and so forth. It's very, very interesting that the Breslover, who was an extraordinarily creative mind, there was a tkuf in his life when he said, I will now only tell stories. Now, the stories he tells are by no means easy stories. They're quite difficult stories. They're stories, if you're taking Kipshuta, they're just a meaningless jumble of stuff. He really, really was trying to express many, many things. But like he said, from now I'm going to start telling stories. This will be my communication. And I thought it means something for people whose world is physical. That's the way it has to be. You deal with the story, and then you know you come out with the point somewhere in it. So he says, but when a person is moner de dibo, shows moire kasechel shlo enemut bochem rak nivl menu, lefikre meda baharbe kasechel and nivl etzlo iker. So usually, as far as we're concerned, to us, it's sort of a switch that flicks from one to the other. You're either in Seichel Yuni mode or Seichel Dibri mode. Let's give a simple mashal. When a person is learning and he's working on a sugya, a person who's at some level of learning, when you're struggling to try to come up with an answer for something, you would like to be left alone and you want quiet. You want to be with yourself. You want to think it through. Once you have the rudiments and the feeling for what you want to say, you want a chavrusa. So let me explain it to you. And then you try to explain. Your chavrusa says, this is not making sense. This doesn't follow. So you rethink it. Then you try it this way, that way. You definitely, shtika is not the absence of dibur. It's rather the switch. It's two modes. The seichel has the seichel dibri mode, and it has the seichel yuni mode. And it goes from one to the other. So by keeping quiet, the person is not, he's presenting himself as someone who is in a mode of uni. They once asked the Brisker Rav, somebody was matzia to the Brisker Rav a shidduch. I don't know if it's for himself or for his children. Probably for his children, because that's how they did shidduchim those days. It wasn't for the Brisker Rav, they would have gone to Reb Chaim, not the Brisker Rav. And the person presented the woman as having a tremendous mila of shtika. So the Rav asked, is she a shoysekis, or she has nothing to talk, to say? In other words, is the pshat the person is, you know, is put himself into shtika in the sense of putting yourself into the mode of iyun, and you think a lot more than you say, which is a transmiler, or the person just doesn't have much to anything. There's not much, not in his head, not in his mouth. In which case, it's not especially big miler. Okay, v'chein mishu yikar ruach. The second half of the pasuk it says yikar ruach, kloma shekoshe b'yoyse. Yikar ruach means the chelik of his self, who is ruach is the part of the person that is the koach hadibri of the person. Yikar ruach means the word yikar means like heavy, ponderous. It's heavy. It's like it would be like kvatz v'sayim would be yikar ruach. So he says, "Kolimish shekosher adir b'yoseh, v'zeh yoseh mechosech hamarav." Chosech hamarav means that he reins in his speech. Here is somebody whose speech is difficult. He's much more comfortable in a world beyond speech. Who ish tfunas legamri? Kibash shekosher v'alav lahoitzi adibu u'bal novoin. Shehanovoin yu yoseh mebaldas. Kan novu shemoitzi dom teich dava. So umipnei shesichlo seichel nidlo gami min agashmi kosh lavadibo shadibo tzirfa lagashmi kosher dei kli gashmi waloshen umishu yikar ruach seichlo nidlo lagamri. Now this is a point that he makes in Nesiv Aloshen a lot, that we said before we was speaking about dibur as being moving things into the realm of the more concrete and the physical. It's true not only mitzad the content of what dibur is, that is the essence of dibur. It's also true the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created that dibur should work. Dibur is fascinating. It starts with sichlius. It starts with a thought which is not physical and ends up being articulated by the mouth and the tongues and so on, which is physical. It's something which you start with the ruach, which is the person's breath of life, which as such is not really concrete in any sense of the word. We don't have a real, we have no way of seeing a person's breath or whatever. And as And then it plays against physical parts, the vocal cords, the lips, the mouth, the teeth, and so on. And that's where the sound comes from. So sound is a combination. When the spirit moves up against, rubs against a physical entity, you get a dibur. That's the dibur you get. So somebody for whom dibur is difficult, it's because he's much more comfortable in a world that's sichlius, that's das, and that's what works for him. I want to move this mashal to another area. This is still more abstract. We're talking about learning, svaras, this, that. Let's talk about something that is something that's more a nefesh of a person. Imagine I do chasadim with people. And I help a lot of people. I don't know, I'm a top with sick people, needy people, and so on. So I get I have a certain feeling of good, of accomplishment, of whatever. If I have a need to talk about it, and yes, recognition, or even before the ooh and ahs of all the people telling me what kind of wonderful person I am, way before that, just the fact is, I don't, that world of having helped somebody in itself is not enough for me. I need to make it something talked about. That's a certain priestess. I can't appreciate the ruchnistic world for what it is. It's not enough that I'm doing good. I need to bring good down and make it part, exchange it into the currency of the world that is. And that's something that is a priestess of you know, taking something down to a physical level. I think I must have spoken to, I probably mentioned you the story about the person who helped people out of Iran and so on. Peter, you probably remember it. You know, when long, do you remember that? The person who would smuggle people out? What?
You told us the one I remember is your Iranian neighbors in Arza Bira.
Okay, so not that, the different one. Okay, good. So we're good. There's a saying that, you know, Chazal you can repeat after 3 months, and stories after a year, and jokes after 3 years, something like that. That's how it goes. So this is a fascinating story for me. There's somebody in Yerushalayim who learned to me yeshiva, whose father, it comes from a very chashev home, like it was a son-in-law, grandson, something very chashev. I didn't know much about him. I knew he's a Talmud Chacham. I knew that he had some sort of tragic story to himself. I didn't know much. I was something mysterious about it. And this person lived many years in his later life in Yerushalayim. Not in Yerushalayim, but near Yerushalayim. And his, I think he had a stroke or something. He was not, he wasn't all disposed to getting around. And he was Nifta. And I went to be Menachem of his son. And his son told me about his father's story. And the story is fascinating. His father was involved in smuggling Jews out of Iran in the, I assume it would have been the 80s, the early 80s. And the person risked his life, put his life in danger many, many, many times. Incredible hardships of taking people out and caring for them. A lot of difficulties. The organization that did it, at some point they needed to fundraise, as all good organizations do, and they wanted him to share his story publicly, but obviously in a way that wouldn't put him in danger, that wouldn't threaten the operation. You know, whatever it was, there was no question that the way they wanted him to get the story out, or to talk to wealthy people, to have a parliament meeting, whatever it was, that was not an issue. His father refused. The people who ran the operation told him they need it. They can't keep running it without it, and they need to fundraise. And if people hear the stories he has to say, the fundraising will go incredibly further. They'll be able to do it. And his father refused, and they got into a spat, and they fired his father, and his father was broken. And he ended up, he lived most of his, the end of his life, I don't know how many years, a decade or more, basically sort of retired in his own corner, not doing much, and very broken. And they once asked their father, he once asked his father, I don't understand. Why were you so adamant that that you're not sharing the story? Well, okay, you liked it. It's not your taste. It is your taste. So what? I mean, it meant the consequence was you got fired, you lost a job, and you were a broken man for yourself. So why was it so important to you? And his father said, when I would, you know, part of his escapades was he had to go through Russia. And when he would cross into Russia, that I remember, I was there once myself in Russia when I was communist, they would force you to exchange your dollars for rubles. They had like a minimum amount that they figured was clear you would spend the country. So I remember for me it was $150 that they exchanged. Now, the true value of the ruble to the dollar when I went was probably 10 ruble to the dollar. Or maybe less, I think it might have been like a ruble might have been worth 8 cents or something, whereas the official government rate was, I believe it was $2 to the ruble. That's what the chief economist had decided the real value is, and you change it to $150, you got 75 or 100 ruble, whatever it was, and it was kind of it's a little bit, for a tourist coming to Russia, it's kind of heartbreaking, you know. You take, you know, first of all, you lose money on it, tons of money. And secondly, you know, you take a really good U.S. dollar bill and you get a piece of worth of garbage. So his father said, that picture of taking something that has real value and exchanging it for garbage had never left me. And he said, the few dollars I have saved up are those things I did in Iran. He said, I'm going to exchange it for a few worthless newspaper articles about me and my bravery and my great accomplishments. And that's it. So I had $1,000 US and I ended up with 500 Russian rubles that are basically worth zero. That's my life. He said, I've come, my understanding is that what I'm doing is taking something that's ruchnius and has value and exchanging it for a few newspaper articles with a picture. But a good point, it's the same, it's in the balance between das and seichel. The dibur is usually taking it down and bring it to this world, and that's why it's one at the price of the other. When a fool keeps quiet, you think of him as a chacham, and someone who shuts his lips is a nov. Ratzolayma, kasha sochel sheisik chacham yachashiv, ki efshe shaliyah boi das ma, mishul oisedeya nechshav chacham, v'einim edal b'sichel shemevatel shenek chacham. So he says something very, very interesting. He says, what's the pshat? It doesn't mean, again, that you fool people. Like if somebody asks me a question I can't answer, I just look at him very deeply and say, well, and leave it at that. And, you know, and people think that I'm right and I know the answer, but I just want to say it. He's talking about something real. So he says every person has some chokhmah to himself. There's nobody who's an absolute fool. But what happens is when our seichel becomes a combination of the shtusim we say plus the stuff we know, it becomes batel b'shishim. So he says the person has some chachma. Hashem da b'shoz bevarim da b'sichel shul kach nikra sochel. Av mishu mechashe b'sichel zen nikra sochel. Ki ein asich zma chachma. If you think wrong, that's not a bit lor chachma. Ki a chachma nikra is chachma av shi machshava. V'yesh a chachma mitzius machshava shabana el, av sichel zen nim zu machshava. Ki ne sichel z mitzius, ki im kashe moitzi a sichelos, az nir a sichelos. So he says here a very deep point. And his point over here is that Chachma, let's use a marshal for this. imagine that I am contemplating I'm trying to figure out the rate at which things fall. And I'm trying to develop a formula for gravity, let's say. So, in as much as I come up with a correct formula, that's a part of a cyclistic world. It's something that's an idea, it's a concept. If I make a mistake, the mistakes are not part of that, but they're an illusion that came about because I was misled by how this fell, or whatever it is. So he says, Chachma be'etzem, in the world of Machshav and Das, it's all Chachma. If mistakes that you're making are because our thinking process makes in some of it, and it'll work its way out. So if you keep thinking enough, and mivar enough, you're left with Das, and with Emes, and so on. Masha Einkein, in as much as in the dibur, so dibur hashtosin, dvar betelim advar. So the ama the oitens fas of novin k'moish ama v'kar ruach ish tvuna. Tvuna and novin go to the person that is be'etzim not capable of saying more stuff. V'rotzon kasha dibur of kasha mitzat tivoy moir shenov legamri kasha oitens fas of enroitz shmer k'moish ispayer. There's one more that says Chapar in Yerushalmi Pesachim Toner Abchia Yofesh Tik Racham Kol Bchaim Letipshim Gam Evel Marash Chach Mir Choshev Ein Tzorim Chacham Machas Shechulu Vezek Ma Shemano Ki Adibu Adi Aseichol Hadibri Shu Noitel Gashem Vein Nivdal Kashe Poil Boy Ein Poil Baseichol Shu Nivdal. So Ulefikach Yofesh Tik Racham Ein Kol Shkin Letipshim. So it's a toggle switch between two modes. Okay, I have to go drop earlier. Do you have any questions or anything?
Sorry, just a, what does it mean,
close
your mouth? At the end of the last paragraph, before the Yerushalmi.
Before the Yerushalmi? What's that? Kasha Dibal of Kasha Tzibi Morish and Novel Gami Kasha Oitem Sfasav. I don't know if it's in Oitel Lishmoya or it should be in Oitel Lashmiya. I don't know. I'm wondering myself if it's not... what?
Maybe it's a mistake.
Right, or it means just he doesn't want to go into the world of Diburim. It probably means Lahashmiya more than you know. It means Lahashmiya. It's either a mistake or just a usage of the word Lashmoa in you know to be heard, as opposed to you know the one or the other.
Okay. And also, just you're saying Mitzad is Teva. He doesn't want to. It's hard for him to speak mitzad is teva. That means he's a navon.
Why? Because in other words, words are difficult. He's more comfortable. It doesn't. If somebody's inarticulate because he's lacking vocabulary, then he's inarticulate because lacking vocabulary. But a person that finds it difficult to express because of the depth of thought that he has, it's in other words, words are too clunky for the level of depth that he has. That indicates an ish navon. He has a finer sense of thought, and it's like, you know, a simple person without depth himself has no problem finding adjectives expressive. It was a wow experience, it was a this or that or another thing. Yes, when the level of your senses and feelings are you know, clunky, then yes, you have a big vocabulary of words to say it.
Okay.
I will be Bez Hashem in Eretz Yisrael from... this January 19th till for about 2 weeks till February 3rd. Mitzvah, that's my Israel trip this year, so we'll have a chance. We'll be together. Okay.
Maybe we could do a shiur in Telstone.
We've done it before.
That'd be good if we could do it.
Okay. Take it. All the best. Good Shabbos. Okay. Bye.
Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos, Rabbi.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye. All too.